Oh, I give thanks today that there is no intro.
Yes. Thanks for the non-intro intro.
To be thankful for.
Yes.
Because otherwise, not a lot going on.
Yeah, is that right?
Figuratively. I mean, there's literally a million things going on. How was your day after Thanksgiving? Oh, great. Just did four shows in a row.
Yeah, I know. You've been very busy. So, yeah, I know.
And barely a second to take a break and watch a little movie or two.
Yeah, but we somehow found some time.
Well, it was work.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, technically. Very technically.
Not exactly a break, is it? Yeah. So we did find time to prepare for the show and watch some movies. So that's good.
Sound like you were going somewhere. Be weird to take a.
I did
take a drink of water right in the middle of that. I
don't know.
It?
I think I lost steam.
Be borderline criminal to do that.
All right. All right. Yeah. I don't know what to say. Other than, I mean, do you have anything else you want to add before we get right into it?
Don't take the show over if you got nowhere to go. Okay. It'd be really easy to just, you know, this is the thing. The movie is coming up. K-22. What's K-22? That's not even is it AM?
Maybe it's like I don't know the answer.
On very low frequency, VLF.
What?
There's UHF. Wait a minute.
TV though, right?
Yeah, that's TV. Shut up. Yeah. There's... The one that submarines use, what's it called? It's like ultra low frequency.
Okay.
Because the thing about waves is that very long frequency waves. Low frequency? Yeah, it's low, because the frequency is how many times the wave peaks or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So they have these things that communicate. It's like called the HARP, and you can communicate with submarines
mm-hmm.
with very low frequency giant antennas that are like underground usually.
Okay.
Because they can penetrate ground, water. It's one of the problems with the sub is when it goes far down, radio waves, high-frequency radios can't reach the submarine through the water.
Okay, sure.
Because it's too thick, basically.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But very low, long wavelengths can.
Okay.
See, I knew we'd find something to talk about.
There we go.
I've got one talent.
It's Let's find us something to talk
snow.
About.
No, it is not covering Bonnie Raitt songs. Let's talk about my movie. The movie I picked was a Robert Altman film called Images from 1972.
Yes.
A very early film of Robert Altman's.
Yes.
Would you call it experimental?
Yes. Yes, I would.
I mean, this is post-MASH. You know, this is post-McCabe and Mrs. Miller, which you should put on your list.
It is on my list.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is 1 year before Long Goodbye.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's... I haven't seen all of those films, but
boy, once
like
we hooked Elliot
different.
Gould up, this is like... Once we hooked Elliot Gould up with Robert Altman, then it was off to the races,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But before that... Images. Images is like the bottom of the trough before.
Wow.
Well, what if I just didn't write the movies and we just had like talented people just make it up while I filmed it?
Yeah, I know.
And I'm not criticizing. One of my favorite directors.
I know. I know.
This is going to be a rough ride.
This, yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about it. What happens in Images?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, right. Boy. Exactly.
So basically... I'm going to summarize as best I can. It is about a children's author, a woman. I don't even know if we learned her name at some point.
Catherine.
That's right. How could I forget?
Said about 70 million times.
Okay. It's about a quarter of the film. So Catherine is a young children's author, and she writes fantasy stories. But
I guess.
From what we know. And, but very early on, we start to learn that she is somewhat mentally unstable, and she's seeing and hearing things that aren't necessarily there, or people that aren't necessarily there, like ex-lovers, or, you know, and she doesn't exactly totally understand what's real and what's not. And she's married, and her husband, like, she has kind of, like, somebody calls her on the phone and tells her that her husband is cheating on her, and she freaks out, and so they decide to go to their cabin that's far away from everything. And then she sees her ex-lover, and, well, actually she saw him before anyways, and then she sees a current lover, or it's complicated, but
doing a great job.
shut up. But she also thinks she sees, like, another version of herself. And so there's a lot of what's real, what's not, who is she, what has she actually done, has she done any of these things, has she done some of these things. And it, the movie is kind of trying to leave you in, like, guessing as to what is actually going on, and if you can try to figure it out, I guess, as Catherine is trying to kind of figure it out for herself.
It's funny how when you have no idea what's going on, it isn't act one, scene one. Buck didn't read the newspaper.
Yeah, like
your synopsis is an actual synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm only going to watch confusing, slightly bad films from now on.
Mm.
We get more efficiency out of your recaps.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. If you say so.
It's In Search of Unicorns.
Yes.
10 years later, Renée Auberjonois would be in a movie called The Last Unicorn.
I was thinking about that last night.
Yes. Yes, yeah. It is.
I know, right?
Coincidence? Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Well, he was the best part of
The What
last
if the
unicorn.
Yarn wall is just one string going to another thing? And mm-hmm. then it's, yes.
Right, exactly.
It's the most sane conspiracy
yes.
theory ever.
Right.
I think it was totally a coincidence. Now that you know what you know, what do you think about Jeffrey Combs playing the Question on Justice League? I bet you're a lot more bullish on that now.
What do you mean?
Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, yes. What about Jeffrey Combs?
Was the voice of the Question.
Oh, I didn't Justice realize League. That. I freaking love Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah,
you
but,
know this.
Right, don't. Sorry. My what? Fault. My fault for jumping track.
Because
I don't want to talk about this film.
Oh, okay.
I think this is I don't think this is good.
I know.
And it's too bad because it's a great performance by Susanna York, who's an interesting figure in that she was, you know, just kind of another sexy lady. She was in a lot of films in Britain in the 60s and was just kind of like this, you know, so rare, sex kitten, sex pot.
Sure.
And just, you know, you're going to be trapped in that your whole life, mm-hmm. you know. And she really broke out of that with movies like this and really got lauded for her acting. She won Best Actress at Cannes. She was nominated for an Oscar, but didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't want to go to the ceremony and basically was forced to go to the ceremony and then didn't win. Of course, Renée Auberjonois is great in it, and there's two other guys that are there, and there's a girl that it's like your first role, so it's basically like the two of those actors are really kicking ass, and everybody else is just fine. It's a guy from French Connection, whatever.
I know.
But other than that, I don't. Sometimes, like when you watch a movie and it reminds you of another movie, you go, "Oh, and it's kind of like this."
Sure.
But all I could think about the entire film was like better films.
That it reminded
me. I'm like,
of.
It's kind of like Don't Look Now, which is better. It's kind of like Revulsion, which is better.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Persona, which is better.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There just isn't, I don't know what, like, the point of it is. Stop moving around. Stop fidgeting. We can hear that. Like, the setup is very simple, and I don't think it carries the film. Right?
Yeah.
She's got legs. She knows how to use them. No. She wants to have a baby, and so therefore she took a series of lovers, but we're told in the synopsis of the film, and I don't think in the text of the film, that she's pregnant now?
Yeah, that wasn't clear either, because there's some lines about how she was pregnant and then she somehow lost
and
the baby.
It smacks to me of, I know that like Susanna York like helped write it, and she wrote, apparently she wrote like
In Search of Unicorns.
In Search of Unicorns,
which is
yeah.
the book that her character wrote.
She wrote like a fan, like Robin Hoffman is just like, welcome aboard. You have a week to write a fantasy novel
that
your character will recite. But I mean, I can see Hoffman doing that. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just feel like I don't. She doesn't feel like a real woman to me. She feels like in the film, yes, she is her tits are squeezed by the guy, and she is constantly like an object to these men. But I feel like she is an object in the film as well. I feel like this is a man writing a woman.
Well, it just, she doesn't like, I think I understand what you're saying. She doesn't feel like a fully realized character.
It isn't like say like Revulsion. And I'm going to give Roman Polanski a compliment because why not?
I know,
it's topsy-turvy day. But like where I feel like, yeah, okay, I get it. It's kind of an easily digestible motivation. Like, you know, we don't ever see that she was abused, but she was abused when she was younger. And so it's caused this, you know, break where she, you know, is reviled by the idea of sex. But the character has like a life that we see and an inner life in the midst of being fondled by her kitchen hallway, you know. And I just felt like, oh, she's going crazy. She can be all these different things. And sometimes she's like, stop biting my neck, why you asshole? But then she's also like, oh yeah, come get it, big boy.
Yeah, she likes
like,
it.
She's mercurial,
right?
And she's a nutty broad.
Well, I thought it was one thing I thought that not necessarily that was interesting. I don't know. So with the three different lovers, like her husband, the former lover, and the other lover.
And the mother lover and the brother lover.
Yeah, right. I mean, she was like different people, right? Like she, or maybe not necessarily different people, but they like brought out different.
Not really, because in the flashback / visions or whatever, when she goes to each one of them, was she supposed to be different? She shows up in a trench coat in all three of them, and she's like, oh, they're like, oh boy, let's get it on. She's like, well, let's have some wine. And then they all kind of maul her.
I guess.
In sex scenes, not the 3-in-1 sex scene, but I'm not even going to go into that. In the sex scene, it's seen through like rainy glass, which was interesting. And it reminded me of, I think Altman was quoting himself or just going, it's been a while. Because in The Player, the kind of climactic, it makes sense when you watch it, sex scene between Tim Robbins and Greta Scacchi is also shown like that. They're basically shown from the shoulders up, and there is this jarring, disjointed jazz music that's playing instead of the disjointed, cling-clangy, you know, horror movie music that's playing. And also the camera keep kind of going in on a focus. And so it reminded me a lot of A Better Movie.
Yeah, well, there you go. I don't know. Maybe not necessarily that particular scene that you brought up. But I just thought her interactions with the men especially, but also the little girl, was all very different. You know, like with her husband, she was trying to reach out to him. She was trying to be loving, but he was kind of like disinterested or didn't know how to react. And then like with the ex-lover, she was like annoyed with him that like he was there because he's supposed to be dead. And it was like she was kind of like mad at him, but she was like teasing him too. Like there was kind of like a slight meanness there. But then with the current lover, like she was like really mean to him and kind of almost
I was
violent.
Really excited when the movie started because I like the idea of a permeable, you know, reality that ghosts or madness or something could come through. And then also, you know, Altman's films are generally grounded in realism.
Yeah.
To the point where we just pan across a cocktail party and just zoom in on whatever conversation we want for the time. And we were going to maybe challenge that a little bit, but also keep it. So like the voice that she hears, which is ostensibly her voice, because this is kind of a doppelganger movie,
right?
Or a gobbledanger movie. Which we'll do something with that later. And the voice is like taunting her on the phone, and then she's just like, and just puts the phone down. And she's like, and another thing, Catherine, you're going to be good, Catherine. Catherine, are you there?
I know, Catherine, right?
Catherine, I'm your spooky voice. I'm trying to scare you. Right?
I know, right?
It's sort of like, oh, that's kind of weird. And then they go off to the cabin and they get out of the car and they're on this like cliff and they look down and see the house. And she looks down and she sees their car pull up and she gets out of the car.
I know.
And then the movie switches to the her that she's seeing, but she's still up there. And I'm like, ooh, where are we going? Where are we going? Nowhere.
Nowhere.
No, that didn't matter at all.
Yeah, I know.
Except
it was
for
like
that sort of comes back because she, you know, sees herself again. Obviously, in the climax, she sees herself. But so it's like I think there's a lot of funk faking going on.
Yeah, I was trying. I think
when you try to be obscure and you try to be arty and you try to have symbols and things like that, they either A, mean something or they don't. B, are clever or they're not. And C, just plain work, or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure this fits any of those things. Mm-hmm. Depending on who you ask, David Lynch is either completely obscure or completely understandable.
Right.
And I've seen all of David Lynch's stuff, and I think that that applies. I think that that's true. But I think there, okay, I think there's some of David Lynch's stuff is completely, I have no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those are the things where he goes, I don't care what's going on. I'm doing this. Because most of his stuff is really, like Blue Velvet, you know, opens, it's a picket fence, a literal picket fence, and then it goes underground and there's worms. And it's like, we get it.
Mm-hmm.
Or like Mulholland Falls is like,
drive.
Damn it. Right a split second before I had to make a decision. Mulholland Drive is very impenetrable until you read a blog post that goes, first half is fantasy, second half is what it really happened. It's like, oh, it all makes sense.
Yeah,
I still don't know who the monster behind the diner is, but maybe that doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
And so that's, you know, in being doing something kind of Lynchian, and this is before Lynch is really operating, but in doing something Lynchian, I think he's just trying to be like, woogie, 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 woogie. Oh, what does it mean? I don't think it really means
but
anything.
It would have been nice if it actually meant something. And then, like, just going back to, like, her seeing a smaller version of herself down at the house.
Not like, you mean far away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not like the old people coming out of the bag in Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, right, right.
Not
no,
literally,
I wasn't
literally smaller.
I wasn't going to refer to that specifically, but I was thinking about, like, her story, and wasn't there, like, people in her story that were, like, really tiny and stuff like that? And that was, like, is this somehow, is the tiny, or the smaller, far away version of her somehow the fantasy version, and is that somehow going to feed into her fantasy stories?
Wow, you held on
stories
to that all through my explanation.
I did.
About, yeah, see, that's, don't do that, though.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because the point was made. I already said that.
Anyways.
There, it's boring. I mean, it's not boring, but it loses all the tension that it sets up. Something that I really also liked early on is we don't really know what's going on with her. They first get to the cottage, and she's acting kind of dotty, and she lights a fire in the fireplace, and she doesn't open the flue, and so smoke starts coming out. And she doesn't see the smoke, and she goes to another room. Then we cut away, and she's just looking for vermouth or whatever. But we know that that smoke is pouring out of the thing, and that creates tension. Like, that it's tense.
Yes.
But then they just open the flue and
it's fine.
Fine.
But he,
and
like,
this is early in the film.
A little bit.
And then we go through a couple like ghosts and some murders, but maybe fake murders. Maybe they're not. And there's a body inside and people keep visiting her, but maybe it's not there. But of course it's not there because it was never there. And who cares?
Yeah. Yeah. But I was like, what are we trying to say about mental illness? What are we trying to say about her mental illness specifically?
This is 1972. They're not trying to say anything.
I know, but that like really bothers me.
I kept thinking of better movies like Dress to Kill.
Oh, boy. That is not.
I thought Susanna York was going to open a drawer and see a piece of paper that says, you have 37 STDs now. Send on to another five people if you don't want your 37 STDs.
I know, right? I don't know.
Let's jump out of this and let's talk about here's my question. What prompted the spooky films of the 70s? There are a lot of spooky films.
Yeah.
In the 70s,
mm-hmm.
Films that aren't quite like horror, but are sort of psychological thriller-esque. They're about paranoia.
I had mentioned Hitchcock, but I think you have some better maybe suggestions than that.
Or maybe we could pretend like we haven't talked about this already and make it interesting from a radio perspective.
Go ahead.
I don't want to be here either. Can we just do the job? Just do the work.
I'm trying.
I wouldn't lump, say, Body Snatchers in, because I think Kaufman was kind of on his own brand. But
yeah, completely fair.
I'll just jump to my theory, because that's what you're setting me up for. I think it was the Giallo films. I think it was like the Argento films. I think it was the Giallo films of the late 1960s, and of course it continued into the 70s. But yeah. By then, I think the American New Wave had like picked up on that and went, all right, well, we don't want like the Gliddens paint blood and like, right, you know, the crazy slasher stuff, but what if we kept that like
psychological
sense of dread, the staging, what really happened there, what was that exactly,
the building of suspension,
add the psychological element of the Polanskis and the French films and things like that, and it'd be turned into this, you know, stew of the killer dwarfs and the Don't Look Nows. That's just a Giallo film, basically, right?
It kind of becomes one at the end. Like, I wouldn't say that like the rest of it necessarily is, but but there is an element of suspense and what's really going on in it, for sure.
This was a very tongue heavy bit of cinema.
A lot of talking, is that what you're saying?
No, a lot of licking with tongues of things.
And sticking tongues out. Yeah, yeah. Because we're 5 years old. I mean, I know the kid was 12, but like, seriously.
A lot of finger licking.
Yeah.
Hot.
And like finger biting. It's really, really hot.
It's hot. There's a lot of
boob grabbing too.
There's a part where... there's a lot of like sort of mistake, because we don't know, I guess they're hallucinations, but like the, you know, the ghost guy wants to do her, American friend wants to do her, and you know, I guess when he gets a chance, Odo wants to do her, but like, and I was like, this is the weirdest episode of Frasier I've ever seen. But it does have like a lot of sitcom kind of tropes in it, you know, or like ideas, you know, the idea of like, oh, I did this, and then like, oh, is he gonna find out about that, and oh no, and he's dripped blood all over this, but it's ketchup or what.
What was up with that, like, because like, she supposedly like injured the dead boyfriend and like he was bleeding everywhere, and then like her husband, Rene Bergeron, comes in and he's bleeding everywhere, but there was also ketchup on the table all of a sudden.
I guess there's just, you know, what? They have condiments. You just leave the ketchup out.
But like, why? I guess to make us wonder if like he was having a laugh, he was having a go.
You think about Catherine or Susanna, excuse me? Oh, what did you think about everybody just shifting one name? That's the kind of like tomfoolery that makes me go, but this, you're not being serious.
I had to do a double take when I saw that, like with the credits. I was like, what?
Everybody in the movie plays
all the male leads, I guess. Yeah,
but no, but the girl is named Catherine or Susanna.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And so then everybody has.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, everybody has a name that is like a name of one of the actors in the film, but they all musical chairs like name. One over there.
Yeah, it's weird. It seems like you're being cute, but like you're winking too hard at the camera.
Did we ever figure out what the radio version of the jerk-off's motion was?
No. We need to have a sound effect or something, but I don't know what... I feel like that's going to be too much.
The pinchy guy is named Hugh, and so Renee's character is named Hugh, and the French guy's named Renee, and then the women swap names too.
Yeah, yeah.
The dog, I don't know.
Yeah, well, there are two dogs in this, and there is also the older man who just shows up randomly, but I think he doesn't get a name. I think he's just old man. So,
I guess there was another, Robert Altman did a film before this called That Cool Day in the Park, which is, I guess, somewhat similar to it. It involves a woman as well who is, you know, descending into mental illness and shutting herself in.
Okay. Huh. I wonder someday if I'll that get one's to, better than this
haven't seen
one.
All the Altmans.
Yeah.
I'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Prairie Home Companion's the real hurdle I'm going to have to get over.
There. Yeah, I know. Just, you know, everything that we know now.
We were talking about Julie Christie. No, we weren't. off air.
Don't look now.
But yeah. Don't look now. Yeah, she did read for this.
Okay. I guess that's not terribly surprising.
Thank God she didn't get it.
Oh, why?
Because she's better in Don't Look Now.
Well, fair. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Did I tell you that if you really want to watch a movie that is weird and it depicts descent into mental illness and it also has stuff that you just go, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that is. This, I get what that image is. At some point, you've lost me.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike this, where that's what I think a good mystery is. David Lynch, I think you can figure out and you go, but it's executed well. And so even though it's not that deep, like it's good.
It's intriguing. Yeah.
Robert Altman's images, you start to think about it and you go, I don't really care. Does it mean anything? What is the unicorn? She's always writing in the thing, the ums or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares? It's the film Possession.
Okay.
By Andrzej Zulikowski, and it has a very, I think, kind of prosaic start in that there's kind of spies in it. It doesn't really matter. But Isabella Gianni's in it, and she's clearly a woman who is, like, losing her mind. And as you watch it, like, things happen that can't happen in real life. This couldn't be happening.
Okay, sure.
But her performance is unbelievable, like once in a lifetime performance, and the third act, I think that there's two acts of like metaphor that you go, oh, it kind of makes sense, and the third act is just like, we're going to space, so you can come along if you want to, and this might mean something and it might not, but it's just sort of entertaining. I don't know.
Okay, well, maybe I should put that on my list then.
Maybe. Got 10 seconds.
I'll fill it down with noise, because I don't want to talk about this movie anymore.
They would call this. This is definitely one of the things you call a brave performance.
Yeah, look, she did an excellent job. I just didn't really enjoy the film that much.
Yeah, she's
so
great.
She was fantastic. I think she deserved that award that she got at Cannes. I just wish that the movie. I wish it figured out what it was going to say, and it said it better.
I just think, like, when your ghost is like, hey, can you just kill me so I'm out of this movie because it's boring? Then, you know, the audience should sort of take the hint. Even the ghost is like, hey, just blow my head off, okay?
You'll feel better.
I want to get out of here.
Yeah, right.
Let's wrap this up.
Yeah.
What movie did you pick?
I picked The African Queen.
African Queen?
Yes.
Wait, no, that's something else. That's something else.
So this was on my list. I'd heard good things for a really long time, but I wasn't super familiar with it. And I did not know before watching it that the African Queen is the name of the boat that they send the bulk of the
Do you think they were
going to
meet
on.
An African queen?
I thought it was
Hello.
Just, no, see, this is me and like my pea brain. I'm like, Is it talking about Katharine Hepburn? Is she somehow like
Whoa.
The queen of Africa
Whoa.
Somehow?
And How was she queen? What?
I don't have a good
we don't
explanation
do that here.
For you. I don't have a good explanation for you. So just telling you what I thought. So anyway, yes, and I'm totally okay with that. So anyways, would you like to give a synopsis?
I guess. I should mention that Amazon says that this movie contains drug use, foul language, nudity, and violence. The African Queen.
Yeah, right.
About as G-rated as I can think of.
I
as
know,
a film.
I know.
Oh, you old poo, stop drinking that gin. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, miss.
I'm going to go swimming in my underwear.
I'm swimming in
Don't
my underwear.
Watch it, me.
My underwear goes from my ankles to my neck. The African Queen is about it's about Rose Sayer, who is a missionary, and her brother, and they are missionaries in German East Africa, which is What did that become eventually?
It's like
Tanzania,
okay,
and Rwanda. It's like it's down in southeast Africa.
Okay,
and so this is at the advent of World War One that will play into the story because right now it's going to German East African troops, Prussian troops come in and burn the village and destroy everything that they've built up over 10 years. In an effort to, you know, they're fighting the colonial battle of World War One is happening on African soil between Belgium or Belgium and and Germany and all that good stuff or bad stuff. And so her stuff is destroyed. They burn the villages so they can enslave the people, and there's nowhere for them to come back to. And her brother does not take this well. He succumbs to mental illness and probably physical illness as well.
Yeah.
In the midst of all this, there is a dude named Charlie Allnut, who is a riverboat captain. He has a small steamer called, it's not even a steamer, it's, I don't even know what to call it, it's a launch, a steam launch, called the African Queen.
Yes.
The titular boat. And he runs mail and supplies up and down the river. Mm-hmm. And he comes back, sees that it's basically just Rosie, everybody's gone, her brother's dead, and says, look, why don't you just come with me? We will take the boat down the river and just park on one of the islands and just wait for the whole thing to blow over. The boat's full of food, supplies, you know, we don't have to worry about it. So she goes along with him, although she realizes that they can't just sit there forever. He tells her that down the lake or down the river on the lake, there is a German ship named the Luisa that has a 6-pound gun and is basically defending the lake. And she decides in a fit of pique that she wants to go downriver and sink that ship.
Yep. Through rapids.
And so the rest of the movie is essentially not a road movie. It's a river movie about them surviving their ordeal, growing closer and trying to reach the lake so they can sink this German ship.
Yes.
And get a little piece of revenge. Take That's a bite right. out of the Kaiser's ass.
That's right. I really enjoyed this movie. I wasn't like sure what to expect from it. And I had no idea that they were going to spend most of the time on the boat, but I guess that kind of becomes clear once the movie actually gets going. But
it's based on a book, excuse me. Based on a book by C.S. Forrester, probably best known for writing the Horatio Hornblower novels.
Oh, okay. There you go.
And it was directed by John Huston.
Yes.
Classic Hollywood director.
I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was great.
You said that before?
Well, it's not a road movie, but it's a...
I said that before?
Okay. But
Something new and original. Out of your mouth. Go.
It's similar. It's an adventure journey type movie. And
Wasn't The Rock in a remake of this?
I'm not familiar with that.
So The Rock is going to be, or has been, I think maybe it was going to come out this year and was canceled because of COVID. But he's in a movie called Jungle Cruise, which is based on the Disney ride, The Jungle Cruise.
Oh, right. Okay.
And in it, he's wearing a hat and a shirt. Like Charlie, I should say. Not just a hat and a shirt.
I was like, what?
And he's got a kerchief around his neck. And Emily Blunt is in a lace collar. And it's like, are you guys doing a stealth African Queen remake? Is that what you're trying to tell me here?
I don't know if I'm okay.
You know, they
with
that. Did remake The African Queen in 1977.
What?
For TV.
What?
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
It's called The African Queen. It's not a remake, it's a sequel.
What?
And
but the
Rosie and Charlie
blows
are
up.
They're recaptured by the Germans and they're forced to transport a 75mm cannon, a gun, like up the river or whatever.
So they have to go the same route back?
I don't know. Maybe it's another place. I don't know.
Okay. All right. What? All right. What? Okay. Anyways, Katharine Hepburn and Humphrey Bogart are amazing in this.
Humphrey Bogart won his only acting Oscar.
Did he really?
For this film.
Wow. Fantastic. I mean, they're very different at the beginning of their journey together. The way that they interact with each other. And she's very formal with him because that's just kind of like her way Always calling him Mr. Allnut and that. Just like, but I like that, like, very early on, he's like, he's used to, I think, going up and down the river with kind of a crew, and it's just him and Rosie right now. So he basically, he teaches her how to steer, with a rudder at the back, and she actually really enjoys it. And then, like, she gets excited about the rapids and everything, too, and that's really fun.
So, we've tried this before off the air, but we're going to try it now again on the air.
Okay.
What do you think this movie's opinion on Christian missionaries is?
I think that they think that the Christian missionaries are not very good at their jobs, for one, and I think they think that they're trying really, really hard and not making any progress. I don't know. It was not very clear to me.
It's very clear to me.
Okay, well, I did not grow up in the church, so maybe you can
Why would that have anything to do with it?
I don't know.
I've never been to Africa. I don't know anything about being a missionary. Except you built schools, seems like.
Right.
Because the character of Rosie is... we have to look at it through the change in her character.
Mm.
Who is somebody who you can imagine is, you know, she lives with her brother. They're not married.
I know.
So she's an old maid, yes. By the terminology of the time.
Yes.
She plays she works hard playing the foot pedal organ.
Yes.
And, you know, we don't get a real glimpse at what their life is like, but that's about it. And then when the time comes and everything she has is destroyed, and she's just going to be, you know, told what to do by another man, she has this awakening where she basically, you know, rolls up her lacy sleeves,
yeah,
and, you know, accomplishes this task, and her entire life and, like, personality changes. But, like,
yeah,
since that's what happens, what it means is, I don't know, but it seems like she's a lot more effective in trying to blow up the Louisa, gets more done than she ever did as, yes, as mercenary. Well, there you go.
Wow.
Missionary. Sorry.
Yeah.
God. And also, we don't have to, we could just see the missionaries talking to the village elders and, like,
yeah, right,
kissing some smiling babies and giving some people some penicillin shots. But instead, it's framed in this one scene in the church,
yeah,
where there's like 50 natives who are all natives. They shot in Africa, at least this part.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to sing a hymn, and it's just this cacophony of a bunch of people who clearly cannot speak English or read a hymnal, all just going, la, 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 na, na, and everybody's sweaty, and I don't know what the missionary minister is trying to communicate. I don't even know this actor, but clearly she's, like, frustrated, and we're not, right, having a good time here. And even the natives are more interested in stogies that he's,
yes, his cast off
throwing on the ground. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like, this is not, we could have shot this a completely different way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Boogie could have come in and been like, I'm here to see Mr. and so-and-so thing. And like, oh, this beautiful chapel and the light comes in through the window. We could have framed this however we wanted, and we framed it this way.
Right. Because I guess we wanted to show that they're not effective, that nobody's having a good time.
You don't get this.
No,
you?
I don't.
You don't.
I've tried saying that in a bunch of different ways. I don't get
it. And it's weird because this is just like, you know, a textual analysis.
I know.
We've done this every day for the greater part of a decade. So, mm-hmm, I don't understand why, mm-hmm, this. Are you afraid of offending religious people?
No, I literally don't understand it. I literally do not. I don't understand what they're trying to put across.
But you understand that they could be putting something across.
Yes.
Okay. So let's say what I just said and then the opposite of what I just said. Which one would you agree with more?
Well, it's probably the one you just said.
Okay. So I think you do understand. I just think that you don't want to play. the game. You don't want to play ball.
No, I disagree with you. It's that's not what's going on. I maybe just feel like because I don't have a religious perspective, I don't understand what they're trying to convey.
You ever taken a steamboat down the
No. The
Uganda River?
No.
Okay, so you can have a perspective on that.
Uh-huh.
It's not fun when you do this.
What?
You're just putting your hooves in and you're just you're being dragged and you're refusing to go. So we'll move on. I think that the staging, I mean, it's just like they're sitting on a boat. This movie is like, when you think about it, you know, 1951, it's in Panavision or Technicolor mm-hmm. or whatever it is. Like, it really is impressive. And there's a couple, I mean, there's nothing really like flashy that happens, but there's a couple really good shots that were designed, I think, to show off like a little bit. There's this shot that's so good that they do it twice, where the boat is sort of, they're on the starboard side of the boat and they're like, well, that's what we got to do or something. And then the boat sort of like reverses and pulls back and then it swings to the right mm-hmm. to take off down the river. And as yeah. it does, like the bow of the ship, like just goes in front of the camera and you see African Queen on the side. And
yeah,
then it sort of
yeah.
vroom, takes yeah. off. And, yeah, I thought that was like, oh, okay, it's showing off a little bit.
I thought that they did a good job, too, in with the rapid scenes, like, just kind of, like, building the tension and, like, she has her first experience with it.
Cut
and
to it's like, blue screen, well, green screen I or know, whatever.
I know. But, like, she was like, oh, that was fun. That was exciting. Oh, and, but like... that was not the reaction he was expecting from her. And he's like, ah, great. Cause I think he was hoping that would talk her out of it, you know?
Yeah. He doesn't want to go down the rapids cause no. they're really bad apparently.
Yeah. And it could really damage the ship. It could, you know, they,
well,
could
it does. It
yeah, it does.
Totally breaks the screw and,
yeah.
and they lose a propeller.
Yeah. But I think they set it up good because it's like the first time it's kind of scary, but it gets progressively worse, you know? But they're always seem like they're able to get through most of it, except towards like the end. They're like literally stuck in mud and they're pulling it through, and then that was, I guess, one of the most ridiculous parts of it. Right, we're not necessarily ridiculous, but I mean that's not the right word. But one of the most unrealistic parts of the movie is I know she's a missionary and she's obviously a religious person.
Skip to the end.
She prays to God. God apparently seems to listen to her and makes it rain.
Is that what's happening? Because
I don't understand.
Know. I don't pray to God for rain, so I guess I don't understand. I don't know. I don't have any context. I can't talk about this. I don't know what it is.
I understand what you're trying to do, but I really just don't. I don't get the beginning.
Just
part.
Admit that you are choosing that you want to stay out of this. Just
Fine.
Admit that. Because you're not a stupid person. You understand.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just saying, if you wanted to analyze the theme of this film with me, which I thought was the point of this show, you would say the movie starts off going, wow, church and religion seems kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the movie, at the end of their rope,
yeah.
they pray for rain and rain saves them.
Rain saves them, yeah.
And it even pans up and we get a shot of the clouds of some God rays. And God's
I know.
Like, okay.
I know. Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like the movie is saying something, right?
Yeah.
Well, you don't. You don't know anything. You're just a caveman.
Yep. Just a caveman.
Okay. All right. We can end it here. We can end it at 45, right? We don't have to go an hour.
Whatever.
Very frustrating.
Sorry.
He mixes the river water with his gin.
Yeah. I didn't. What is that about?
Well, because he doesn't drink the gin straight, right? But he doesn't have. If they have potable water on the boat,
mm-hmm.
he's not going to waste it mixing it
with gin,
right? So he just puts his glass in the water, mm-hmm. and I guess the alcohol just kills anything in the water, so it's fine. Because later on, when she wants tea, he takes water from the boiler,
yes,
which would also be potable because it was just steam. There's nothing in it.
Yeah,
but I just think that that's like. I just think that's an interesting, you know, foible that he has.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's just like, yeah, whatever.
I know. Well, and I like to, like, he gets drunk and he calls her names and it's... He's it's
the
like,
most fictional
oh
thing in
gosh.
This movie is that they fall in love, but of course
I know
only be half a story if they don't.
I know, but then like she like dumps out all this alcohol, and I love how he wakes up, but he's like so drunk he can't stop her, and then we see she's been doing this for probably the entire time.
He's like, oh no, don't do that.
I know.
No.
So that was pretty good.
He plays a good drunk.
Yeah, he does. I know it is kind of ridiculous that they fall in love, but I kind of guessed that that was what was going to happen. I mean, at least it didn't happen like right away, you know?
Well, maybe one of the reasons that people liked his performance so much is because it's a lot different than his usual performances. You know, he's...
Yes.
He's doing a Maltese Falcon. He's doing a Casablanca. He's like, hey, yeah. Kid, he's looking at you. And in this, he's just like so excited to have a girlfriend. He's like, oh, Rosie, you're so great. And he's like, always putting his arm around her. He's like, yeah, come on. But I mean, as like an old maid missionary, she probably couldn't handle anything faster than that. So I guess it works out. They're a real pair.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because like, yeah, she's an old maid missionary, but also at the very beginning, like he's supposed to be painted as kind of really unattractive. You know, I mean, like they didn't have him like fart or anything, but like he was
a lot of growling, a little farther
stomach,
up the river, if you will.
Yeah, growling stomach noises, yeah. And he's just supposed to be, you know, her brother's like, oh, insufferable man, you know,
more or less,
oh my gosh, this guy. But I love how too, like, he basically tells them that the war is coming, and then like literally the Germans show up as he walks out of the village.
Well, it's there's a lot of that, because you would presume that this whole trip, you know, takes days, you know, or
yes.
weeks to get down the river. But yeah, there would always be like a little, maybe a montage of a few scenes of, you know, the trees going by, going down the river. And then she'd be like, Mr. Allnut, what would we do when we do this? And he's like, well, you know, we got to do the thing, because if we don't do a thing, we can have a problem. Oh, no, it's that thing I was talking about. And
it's
just like, that's how we would get out of every scene.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what are they going to do?
I know. I did enjoy that very early on when they were on the boat together, and she's like, oh, Mr. Ona, and she's like asking him a bunch of different questions.
I'm still right here.
I know.
It wouldn't be anybody else.
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
I do like that scene. One of my favorite scenes is when they're getting through the reeds, and the thing where they have to go out and drag the boat.
Yeah.
And so he's just dragging it, and they finally get to a place where they, you know, feel like, oh, we can go forward. And he's like, that wasn't so bad. And then, oh, no, look in your back. And he takes all his clothes off, and he's covered in leeches, and they got to get them all off. And it's like, oh, that was the worst. And the boat's still not moving at all. And he's just like, I got to go back in the water. And he goes right back in there. And yeah, it was cool.
It was good. And like, you could tell, like, you know, as they're going through the reeds and they're pushing the boat and they're pulling the boat and everything, like, she's always like, no, we can do it. We can do this. We got this. You know, he's the doubter, but she's the optimist. But even she's like, yeah, I don't know if we're going to make it through this, you know. So it was just interesting to see that and see their attitudes change and that sort of thing. It was kind of sad too, like when they're approaching the Wisa, and it's like the storm, and then they capsize. I was like, what? And then I wasn't expecting that. But then, like, what did you think of like the end? Like after they get captured, I liked how she they're gonna get hung by the Germans, and she's like, well, we might as well tell them what we were gonna do anyways, you know, so they at least know. I liked that part. I thought that was good. And he asked the captain to marry them. That was great. But what did you think about, like, the Luisa actually hitting the African queen and blowing up?
I think it's more, just more of this whole God works in mysterious ways thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's, you could see, depending on how you want to look at it, you could see it as, you could see it three different ways. You could see it as, forget God, you know, there is no God. They made this happen. They worked hard and they did this. Because that's, you know, when she confesses to them, it's sort of like they're signing the crime. You know, it's
right.
Like, we wanted to do this, whether or not they knew they were going to get away with it or make it happen. Or you could see it as like, No, like, you wanted this to happen, you prayed for it, and God led you there, and because God's a little trickster, mm-hmm. He threw a little twist in at the end, but it all worked out.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could see it as, I don't know if Forster would have saw it this way, but kind of a deist way, that it's like, you know, God helps those that help themselves, a sort of Calvinist work ethic.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it like that too, yeah.
But I still think that God's just inherently tied to it, which makes the first scene so weird.
It is weird. Why?
Maybe we're viewing it out of the wrong... Oh, you want to talk about it? I don't know. Maybe we're viewing it out of the wrong cultural context. Maybe somebody in 1951 would go, oh, good, they gave those toothless African people some Jesus. They're singing a hymn.
It just, it seems like they're frustrated and they're not happy with how it's going. So, and I don't know how long they've been there. It seems like it's been a while.
You know who really wasn't happy with how it's going?
Who?
Katharine Hepburn.
Oh, yeah.
Out of shot at the organ, there's a bucket for her to throw up in. Because they shot that pretty early and everybody got sick.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they shot that on location. They shot a lot of this on location, actually.
Yeah.
They could have just shot it back home, but they shot it out there. And everybody got sick except, like, Bogey and, like, some of the producers because they never drank water when they were there.
Oh, so well, that's boop, smart. Boop,
little, good, good, little.
Yeah, good, good, yeah good, just get your alcohol, rinse and spit
so,
with
so
your toothpaste.
Catherine Hepburn's like, can you hold?
Oh, my just gosh. Imagine.
Catherine
That's
Hepburn
horrible.
Puking into a bucket and then like, let's go again.
Well, I wonder if all that sweat was their real sweat then.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's unfortunate. makes, I guess, I just can't imagine anything worse than, like, not feeling good and still having to perform, but that's, you know, I guess part of it sometimes.
You've never thrown up backstage before?
Not backstage, no. What?
I'm guessing you've thrown up before.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, in a in a performance context.
No, I've never had in a performance
context.
Call
yourself an actress.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
Have you ever been around somebody who's thrown up before?
I don't remember, so I must not have.
It hasn't happened.
Yeah.
You call yourself an actress.
Jeez. Wow.
What are you even doing out there?
Wow. Judgy. Yeah. I mean, how would you have done that opening scene differently? I guess.
Well, I didn't want to come back to it a fourth time. I thought it was three was, right? Three. I don't know. I just would have made it clearer in your intent. I think that they were probably jazzed, like, what? We've got real... I think there's a gawky aspect to it. Like, we got real natives to be in our movie.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it's like, what's the point? Why are they there? You know, we see them in, like, two scenes. We see them in the church, and then we later see the Germans round them up and take them away, and
That's
no more
it.
Black people in the movie.
I know.
Until we get the black stewards on the German boat at the end.
Yeah.
And we blow them up?
I think most of them get off, but
yeah.
I don't know.
So there isn't any real message that's being made or any point. Oh, no, we also see them when there's a part in the middle of the movie where they have to make this bend in the river, and at the bend there's
a
fortress that the Germans have taken over.
Yes.
And so they've of course got sepoys that's in India, but black soldiers in their employ.
Yeah.
And some I think those were shot in America because the black actors are at one point they're shooting, they're like, whoa, man, like, woo, I got them.
What?
They're celebrating in what feels like a very Western way to me.
Okay.
Because they're shooting, they're like, yeah, shoot them, yeah, woo.
Okay. That's funny.
So, you didn't have to throw up. You didn't have to shoot those parts in Africa. You could have shot them, you know, in London where you shot, like, the rest of it.
Well, they are very proud that they shot a lot of it on Africa. That you do see that at the end with the, you know, the credits.
Shot in Africa.
I mean, they did show off a lot of animals within the film, too, which would seem very safari-esque, almost.
Yes, that's
Charlie
Elnott's second date game.
Yeah,
she's
right?
Like, check out all the animal impressions I can do.
Right. I know. I was like, stop. Like, mimicking the hippos. They're going to come after you, chimp. And knock you into the river and, like, eat you.
Yeah, they made a big deal about, we see a lot of crocodiles, and that's fine. They make a deal about hippos, and hippo never comes back. There will be a Hippo in the Rock remake of this, of course.
Oh, for sure.
That leads me to my last point, which will take us to the end.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
1951. Mm-hmm. It's been a while. Do it, cowards. Remake the African Queen. Do it with more characters, but not a lot. Do it with historical accuracy. Mm-hmm. And check this out. All Nuts Black.
Okay, sure. Why not?
He can still be... He can be Oxford educated. Do you know what I mean? Like, he went to school in Britain. He's not from Uganda or the area necessarily, but he is from Africa. And so he's plying his trade on a riverboat, you know, but he is a native person. And it's a multi or multi. How many are we bringing in here? It's a it's a biracial romance.
Sure.
You know, you know, do that. But looks like they've got that covered. And the Jungle Cruise, coming to a theater near you in 2021.
Oh my goodness. Wow. I really hope that's not what's going on with that movie.
Jungle Cruise.
I do remember hearing about it now.
You've given up, so we're just going to do this now.
Oh, okay.
2021, The Jungle Cruise. Dr. Lily Houghton enlists the aid of wisecracking skipper Frank Wolf to take her down the Amazon in his ramshackle boat. Together, they search for an ancient tree that holds the power to heal. So it's Medicine Man mixed with
African Queen. Yeah.
Coming to a Covidios in late 2021. Watch out for that.
Oh, my gosh.
So what did we learn?
Missionary bad. Apparently. I don't know.
You old poo, why did you get an Oscar?
Yeah, right. She got Oscars for other things, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
So that's fine. I don't know. Missionary's bad, God good. I don't know. Is that what we learned? I don't know.
Mix your gin with river water.
Yeah,
and
right.
And your heart with love.
And mock the hippos.
Mock the hippos. Mock the hippos. Hashtag. All right, well, all things work together for good to them that love movies. And we'll see you next time for more movies.